Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
All right, it's August 6th, 2015, 8:57, almost 8:58 p.m. Eastern. It is time for the second of the two Republican debates of the evening. This one is at the adult table. Let's tune in.
I guess they all know this. They've been talking about each other a lot during the previous 6 months or so.
Here's Chris Wallace, basically.
And obviously, this is all part of the process of the American people here in this
hall
across
the
nation trying to sort out who should be the Republican nominee.
Chris Wallace is explaining the concept of a debate to them. I think you guys get it.
Please go to your podium.
All the men are there. They're all wearing blue suits. Ben Carson's suit is slightly less blue than the other ones.
That this debate obviously is the top
10
in polling.
And here we go. As you can see on our feed,
top to bottom in the
we have
we had
a takedown notice after the first debate, so we've done a reenactment. As you can see, we have all 10 candidates there that are, I guess, they are being represented by different figurines from the Bush era, including a Ken doll and a gob of guacamole. We'll let you guess who that's supposed to represent. And a picture of Donald Trump hovering over all of them, as that is our anticipation of what's going to happen this evening. Apparently, the moderators are just talking to each other.
We should point out our next debate is right before.
And they're doing a little bit of promotion. So we'll wait later in the evening. Following this debate, we will shut down for a minute or two, a couple of minutes, 5 minutes. And then Cliff Schechter will join me to give our reactions of both debates tonight. There's a bit of jibber-jabber. It's like they don't realize that they're on air. Sort of not unlike us. Now, there are people in the stadium for this one. Apparently, they must have done it in the back room for the first one. They probably just did it on the other side of the stadium. Oh, here they go. Oh, my God. As you can see, or you can't, there's an image of the American flag. There you go. She just copied me. I started this off by giving the time, apparently. Megyn Kelly thought that was a good idea. Okay. Well, good for her.
Talent imitates, genius steals.
That's right. And they are, look at Chris Wallace. He seems very excited to be there.
Very matronly presence from Chris Wallace tonight.
Millions of voters at home will get their very first chance to see the candidates face off in a debate.
Yes, that is true.
You want answered.
Less than a year from now,
here we
in this
go.
Very arena, one of these 10 candidates, or one of the 7 on the previous debate tonight, will accept
or
the
Mitt
Republican
Romney.
Party's
could
nomination.
Be.
I'm coming
Tonight's
back.
Candidates were selected based on an average of 5 national polls. Just a few hours ago, you
guys
heard from the candidates ranked 11 through 17, and now the primetime event,
the losers,
the top 10.
Also of note, Fox News is partnering for tonight's debate with Facebook. For the past several weeks, we've been asking you for questions for the candidates on Facebook.
Oh, God.
Where's Jim Gilmore when you need him? Shut up.
Yeah, come on.
Let's get to the debate.
Oh, my God. 6 million people talking on Facebook. What?
The candidates tonight.
As for the candidates who will be answering those questions, here they are. positioned on the stage, bow, and how they stand bow, bow, bow. In the center of the stage tonight. Businessmen.
Yeah! There we go. Fan favorite here.
Right there. That's the truth.
Jeb Bush.
Okay, so far, 2 for 2 on the flag lapel pins. Three for three.
That was a boo snore for Jeb Bush. Boo snore.
Well, Scott Walker showing that he does have the ability to wink.
No Huckabee. American flag.
No American flag.
He is so American. Ooh, Ben Carson.
Ben Carson.
Reflecting on the prison experience.
Also, no flag lapel pin. Interesting.
Ted Cruz doesn't need a flag pin.
Marco Rubio.
Ted Cruz is the most American.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
Did you say the plucky?
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Oh, he's got a jersey.
I could go for a chip.
Governor of Ohio.
Well, Kasich got a lot.
It's a home crowd.
That's right.
But Kasich is the one to watch, as we always say.
Yeah. Oh, boy. This could be fun. The question is going to be, is the audience allowed to cheer during the thing? We'll find out in just a moment.
I think they will be when, you know, Christie's going to really try. Chrissy's going to attack Jeb.
It might be. It might be. We'll see. Listen, the rules.
Some objections coming.
It might be. The rules for tonight are simple. 1 minute for answers, 30 seconds for follow-ups.
Oh, it's going to be deep.
If a candidate runs over, you'll hear this. We also have a big
love
crowd
it.
Here with us tonight in the home of the Cavaliers,
how
as
about
I mentioned.
They want, they can use this.
Them, we you expect them to be enthusiastic, as you heard. We don't want to take anything away from the valuable time for the candidates. So we're looking
Michael's
for somewhere
drunk.
Between
just tell you that.
A reaction to a LeBron James dunk and the Cleveland Public Library.
Credit, across that was a kind of funny joke.
Somewhere there we'll find a balance tonight. Without further ado, let's begin.
I gotta say,
gentlemen,
great teeth,
we know
Brad Bear.
How much you
great
love hand raising questions. So we promise this is the only one tonight. The only one. Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party?
This is
and
the
pledge
trying
to not run an independent campaign
Trump
against
question.
That person. Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand
don't
now
raise
if
it,
you
Donald.
Won't make that pledge tonight. Woo! Mr. Trump.
I love it.
He's the best.
Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing
a man
on the Republican
with guts.
Primary
debate. I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will
he gets
give
it.
The nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an
he
independent run
it.
Would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely
stop
another
wasting
Clinton.
Mr. Trump's time.
You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge.
I cannot say I have to respect the person that if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge I will not run as an independent. But and I am discussing it with everybody. But I'm, you know, talking about a lot of leverage. We want to win and we will win. But I want to win as the Republican. I want to run as the Republican nominee.
So tonight you can't say if another one of these.
He answered you, Brett.
What's wrong? He buys and sells politicians of all stripes. He's already, hey, look,
he's, like
he's
a Jew.
Already hedging his bet on the Clintons, okay? So if he doesn't run as a Republican, maybe he supports Clinton or maybe runs as an independent.
Okay.
But I'd say that he's already hedging his bets because he's used to buying politicians.
Well, I've given him plenty of money.
Boom.
To be clear, you can't make the, we're going to move on. You're not going to make the pledge tonight.
I will not make the pledge at this time.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
That's I love this guy. Him and Bernie are the yin
that's
and
it.
Yang of this election.
I think that's a 50-50 split.
Of questions is on the
and there you have it, folks.
Electability
that's going to be the story for the next
in the general election.
6 months.
And we start tonight with you, Dr. Carson. You are a successful neurosurgeon, but you admit
that's
that you
correct.
Have had to study up when it comes to foreign policy, saying there's a lot to learn.
What's
your
the
critics
Knesset?
Say that your inexperience
the, all
shows.
Sorts of stupid things
you suggested that the Baltic states are not a part of NATO. Just months ago, you were unfamiliar with the major political parties and government in Israel. And domestically, you thought Alan Greenspan had been Treasury Secretary instead of Federal Reserve Chair. Aren't these basic mistakes?
Who's Alan Greenspan?
And don't they raise legitimate questions
I have a life.
About
I
whether you
things.
Are ready to be president?
Well, I could take issue with all of those things, but we don't have time. But I will say... we have a debate here tonight, and we will have an opportunity to explore those areas. And I'm looking very much forward to demonstrating that, in fact, the thing that is probably most important is having a brain and to be able to figure things out and learn things very rapidly. So
I think they all actually have brains.
Experience comes from a large number of different arenas.
He's a brain
and
surgeon.
And America became a great nation aware of
early
of universal
on,
distribution
not because
of brains.
It was flooded with politicians, but because it was flooded with people who understood the value of personal responsibility, hard work, creativity, innovation,
and
that's what will get us on the right track now as well.
Senator Rubio, when Jeb Bush announced his candidacy for presidency, he said this: there's no passing off responsibility when you're a governor, no blending into the legislative crowd. Could you please address Governor Bush across the stage here and explain to him why you, someone who has never held executive office, are better prepared to be president than he is, a man who you say did a great job running your state of Florida for 8 years?
Well, thank you for the question, Chris, and it's great to be here tonight. Let me begin by saying this. I'm not new to the political process. I was making a contribution as the speaker of the third largest and most diverse state in the country well before I even got into the Senate. I would add to that that this election cannot be a resume competition. It's important to be qualified, but if this election is a resume competition, then Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president because she's been in office and in government longer than anybody else running here tonight.
That's good for
him. Here's what this election better be about. This election better be about the future,
Clinton.
Not the past.
Yes.
It better be about the
Marshall
issues
Rubio
our nation and the world is facing today.
Very clever.
Not simply the issues we once faced. This country is facing an economy that has been radically transformed. You know, the largest retailer in the country, in the world today, Amazon doesn't even own a single store.
That's
and these changes have
books.
Been disruptive. They have changed people's lives. The jobs that once sustained our middle class, they either don't pay enough or they are gone. And we need someone that understands that as our nominee. If I'm our nominee, how is Hillary Clinton going to lecture me about living paycheck to paycheck? I was raised paycheck
to
paycheck. I'm broke. How is she?
Excuse me, Hillary. I use credit cards to enrich myself and my wife illegally.
I owed over $100,000 just 4 years ago. If I'm our nominee, we will be the party of the
future. And now I'm a multimillionaire. Oh, wait a second. I've been senator.
Excuse me. But that said, I would love to tell you about a great new investment opportunity.
You say you have a life experience uniquely your own, not your father's, not your brother's. But there are several opponents on this stage who get big applause lines.
The boring, uncharismatic brother of the worst president ever.
Quote, the last thing the country needs is another Bush in the Oval Office. So do you understand the real concern in this country about dynastic politics?
Absolutely, I do. And I'm going to run hard, run with heart, and run to win. I'm going to have to earn this. Maybe the bar is even higher for me. That's fine. I've got a record in Florida. I'm proud of my dad, and I'm certainly proud of my brother. In Florida, they call me Jeb because I earned it. I cut taxes every year, totaling $19 billion. We balanced every budget. We went from $1 billion of reserves to $9 billion of reserves. We were one of two states that went to AAA bond rating. They call me Vito Corleone because I veto 2,500 separate line items in the budget.
He's making Mitt Romney seem like Muhammad Ali.
I governed as a conservative, and I governed effectively. And the net effect was, during my
years,
1.3 million jobs were created. We left the state better off because I applied conservative principles in a purple state the right way, and people rose up.
Also,
and some of the private education companies call me money bags.
One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals.
Why are you helping him so much,
Your
Megan?
Twitter account
only
is
Rosie
several...
O'Donnell.
No, I wasn't.
His polling rate, his polling points just went through the roof again.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been... I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble.
They're giving him multiple
we don't
Chiron
win anymore.
Ones. He's the only
we
got
lose
two.
To China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. And frankly, what I say, and oftentimes it's fun, it's kidding, we have a good time. What I say is what I say. And honestly, Megan, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've been very nice to you, although I could probably maybe not be based on the way you have treated me, but I wouldn't do that. But you know what? We need strength. We need energy. We need quickness, and we need brain in this country to turn it around. That I can tell you right now.
Senator Cruz, your colleague, Senator Paul, right there next to you, said a few months ago he agrees with you on a number of issues, but he says you do nothing to grow the party. He says you feed red meat to the base, but you don't reach out to minorities. You have a toxic relationship with GOP leaders in Congress. You even called the Republican Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, a liar recently. How can you win in 2016 when you're such a divisive figure?
Chris, I believe the American people are looking for someone to speak the truth.
Chris, I'm a sociopath. And I will literally put your body in
chloroform. If you're looking for someone to go to Washington, to go along, to get along, to agree with the career politicians in both parties who get in bed with the lobbyists and special interests, then I ain't your guy. There is a reason that we have $18 trillion in debt. Because as conservatives, as Republicans, we keep winning elections. We got a Republican House, we got a Republican Senate, and we don't have leaders who honor their commitments. I will always tell the truth and do what I said I would do.
Chris, if you want a candidate that doesn't kill small children, I'm not your guy.
You're not exactly the darling of conservatives. You tout your record as a Republican governor in a blue state. On Facebook, the most people talking about you, not surprisingly, come from your state of New Jersey. And one of the top issues they are talking about is the economy. This may be why. Under your watch, New Jersey has undergone 9 credit rating downgrades. The state's 44th in private sector growth. You face an employee pension crisis. And the Garden State has the 3rd highest foreclosure rate.
In other words, you're just
country.
A bad governor.
So why should voters
believe getting nicer questions.
That your management of the country's finances would be any different?
If you think it's bad now, you should have seen it when I got there. Fact is, in the 8 years before I became governor, taxes and fees were raised at the state level 115 times. In the 8 years before I became governor, spending was increased 56%. And in the 8 years before I became governor, there was zero net private sector job growth in New Jersey. Zero for 8 years. So what did we do? We came in, we balanced an $11 billion deficit on a $29 billion budget by cutting over 800 programs in the state budget. We brought the budget into balance with no tax increases. In fact, we vetoed 5 income tax increases during my time as governor. We cut business taxes $2.3 billion, and we cut regulation by one-third of what my predecessor put in place. And what's happened since? 192,000 new private sector jobs in the 5.5 years I've been governor. We have a lot of work to do in New Jersey, but I am darn proud of how we've brought our state back.
Respectable.
Governor Walker, you've consistently said that you want to make abortion illegal, even in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. You recently signed an abortion law in Wisconsin that does have an exception for the mother's life, but you are on record as having objected to it. Would you really let a mother die rather than have an abortion? And with 83% of the American public in favor of a life exception, are you two out of the mainstream on this issue to win the general election?
It's kind of cool to let
I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position I think is consistent with many Americans
out there. Would you abort
that
bald spot if you could?
And then I believe that that is an unborn child that's in need of protection out there. And I've said many a time that that unborn child can be protected, and there are many other alternatives that will also protect the life of that mother. That's been consistently proven. Unlike Hillary Clinton, who has a radical position in terms of support for Planned Parenthood, I defunded Planned Parenthood more than 4 years ago, long before any of these videos came out. I've got a position that's in line with everyday America.
Governor Huckabee, like Governor Walker, you have staked out strong positions on social issues. Pushing
Walker, and that's a softball, right? This is supposed to be the supposed challenging question.
You nailed it.
Amendment banning abortions.
He nailed it. It's like, how come you like are so anti-abortion?
I agree with you, but according to the polls, and again, this is an electability question. According to the polls, more people don't. So, how do you persuade enough independents and Democrats to get elected in 2016?
Chris, I disagree with the idea that the real issue is a constitutional amendment. That's a long and difficult process. I've actually taken a position that's bolder than that. A lot of people are talking about defunding Planned Parenthood as if that's a huge game changer. I think it's time to do something even more bold.
Troops.
I think the next president ought to invoke the 5th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. Now that we clearly know that that baby inside the mother's womb is a person at the moment of conception. The reason we know that it is because of the DNA schedule that we now have clear scientific evidence on. And this notion that we just continue to ignore the personhood of the individual is a violation of that unborn child's 5th and 14th Amendment rights for due process and equal protection under the law. It's time that we recognize the Supreme Court.
Just a reminder about Huckabee's science. He sells cinnamon to fight diabetes.
And protect children instead of rip up their body parts and sell them like their parts to a Buick.
Why not a Porsche?
Senator Paul, you recently blamed the rise of ISIS on Republican hawks. Now, you later said that that statement, you could have said it better.
Jews.
But the statement went on, and you said, quote, everything they've talked about in foreign policy, they've been wrong for the last 20 years. Why are you so quick to blame your own party?
First of all, only ISIS is responsible for the terrorism. Only ISIS is responsible for the depravity. But we do have to examine, how are we going to defeat ISIS? I've got a proposal. I'm the leading voice in America for not arming the allies of ISIS.
Smart.
I've been fighting amidst a lot of opposition from both Hillary Clinton as well as some Republicans who wanted to send arms to the allies of ISIS. ISIS rides around in $1 billion worth of U.S. Humvees. It's a disgrace. We ought to stop it. We shouldn't fund our enemies, for goodness sakes. So we didn't create ISIS. ISIS created themselves, but we will stop them. And one of the ways we stop them is by not funding them and by not arming them.
Governor Kasich, you chose to expand Medicaid in your state, unlike several other governors on this stage tonight. And it is already over budget by some estimates, costing taxpayers an additional $1.4 billion in just the first 18 months. You've defended your Medicaid expansion by invoking God, saying to skeptics that when they arrive in heaven, St. Peter isn't going to ask them how small they've kept government, but what they have done for the poor. Why should Republican voters, who generally want to shrink government, believe that you won't use your St. Peter rationale to expand every government program?
Well, first of all, Megan, you should know that that President Reagan expanded Medicaid 3 or 4 times. Secondly,
Reagan,
I had an opportunity to bring resources back to Ohio to do what? To treat the mentally ill. 10,000 of them sit in our prisons. It costs $22,500 a year to keep them in prison. I'd rather get them their medication so they could lead a decent life. Secondly, we are rehabbing the drug addicted. 80% of the people in our prisons have addiction problems. We now treat them in the prisons, release them in the community, and the recidivism rate is 10%. And everybody across this country knows that the tsunami of drugs is threatening their very families. So we're treating them and getting them on their feet. And finally, the working poor, instead of them having come into the emergency rooms where it costs more, where they're sicker and we end up paying, we brought a program in here to make sure that people could get on their feet. And you know what? Everybody has a right to their God-given purpose. And finally, our Medicaid is growing at one of the lowest rates in the country. And finally, we went from $8 billion in the hole to $2 billion in the black. We've cut $5 billion in taxes, and we've grown 350,000 jobs.
He's the threat.
Yes. That was Kasich.
This is what we've been saying.
People have
to a new subject that all of you have been talking about.
Give the name of who is
spoken about, and that is the issue of immigration. Governor Bush, you released a new plan this week on illegal immigration, focusing on enforcement, which some suggest is your effort to show that you're not soft on that issue. I want to ask you about a statement that you made last year about illegal immigrants, and here's what you said. They broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's an act of love. It's an act of commitment to your family. Do you stand by that statement, and do you stand by your support for earned legal status?
I do. I believe that the great majority of people coming here illegally have no other option. They want to provide for their family. But we need to control our border. It's our responsibility to pick and choose who comes in. So I've written a book about this, and yes, this week I did come up with a comprehensive strategy that really mirrored what we said in the book, which is that we need to deal with E-Verify, we need to deal with people that come with a legal visa and overstay, we need to be much more strategic on how we deal with border enforcement, border security, we need to eliminate the sanctuary cities in this country. It is ridiculous and tragic that people are dying because of the fact that local governments are not following the federal law. There's much to do. And I think rather than talking about this as a wedge issue, which Barack Obama's done now for 6 long years, The next president, and I hope to be that president, will fix this once and for all so that we can turn this into a driver for high sustained economic growth. And there should be a path to earn legal status for those that are here. Not amnesty. Earn legal status, Rusty. Which means you pay a fine and do many things over an extended period of time.
Amnesty.
Yeah, it sounds like amnesty.
Mr. Trump,
with a parking ticket charge.
Anybody's noticed that you say that the Mexican government is sending criminals, rapists, drug dealers across the border. Governor Bush has called those remarks, quote, extraordinarily ugly. I'd like you're right next to him, talk to him directly and say how you respond
Simian
to that.
Simian aggression.
And you have repeatedly said that you have evidence that the Mexican government is doing this, but that you have evidence you have refused or declined to share. Why not use this first Republican presidential debate to share your proof with the American people?
So, if it weren't for me, you wouldn't even be talking about illegal immigration, Chris. You wouldn't even be talking about it.
Oh, my God.
This was not a subject that was on anybody's mind until I brought it up at my announcement, and I said Mexico is sending. Except the reporters, because they're a very dishonest lot, generally speaking, in the world of politics, they didn't cover my statement the way I said it. The fact is, since then, many killings, murders, crime, drugs pouring across the border, our money going out and the drugs coming in. And I said, we need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly. And I don't mind having a big, beautiful door in that wall so that people can come into this country legally.
The most luxurious door you've ever seen.
We need, Jeb, to build a wall. We need to keep illegals out.
This is what I said he would say when he was confronted with this a month ago.
Killing it.
Who else wants to build a wall? Jeb, I want to build a wall.
What evidence do you have, specific evidence, that the Mexican government is sending criminals across the border?
How is this a worry?
30 seconds.
Border Patrol, I was at the border last week. Border Patrol people that I deal with, that I talk to, they say this is what's happening because our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid. And the Mexican government is much smarter, much sharper, much more cunning. And they send the bad ones over because they don't want to pay for them. They don't want to take care of them. Why should they when the stupid leaders of the United States will do it for them? And that's what's happening, whether you like it or not.
I think that answers your question,
right,
Chris.
Obviously, there's a lot more to talk about this. We're going to have more questions for the candidates on illegal immigration, plus other key topics,
that was Donald
including
Trump,
your questions.
For those people who
are killing it.
He's not in any way.
There's no way to.
What would be your plan on making immigration easier for those that want to do it legally?
What specific steps would you take to contain the growth of ISIS?
I'd like to know.
I'd take you out of
what
that.
What the candidates are going to do so that I feel safe in my own country again?
Really, nothing we could do for you. You're obviously very troubled.
It's amazing how much they are pushing on the ISIS, the candidates, ISIS.
We live in a world of...
What the heck is that? So things have gone more or less like we haven't had too much. Yeah, take the sound
down. Sound
down. Things have gone, just to recap at this point, things have gone pretty much as we anticipated, I think. I feel it's hard to know. I think Trump has obviously gotten more airtime, and he just fills it. He's just much more dramatic. I mean, I know Kasich said something, but what was interesting, let's just review this first round of questions, because everyone was challenged ostensibly on something that would turn conservatives off, but for Scott Walker.
Scott Walker got the massive
Scott Walker softball. Said, "You're so conservative. How can you justify being so conservative?" And he said, "Well, I'm that conservative." And then everybody applauded. Now, remember, this is the Republican primary. Jeb was, I don't even remember what the question Jeb got. I felt like someone hit me with a 2x4. Why they call him Jeb?
No, he said that's how he earned that name.
Is there something about the word name Jeb that I don't
know? What happens in Florida was that when you, on the fifth time that you cut multimillionaires' taxes in Palm Beach, you earn the title Jeb.
Touché, Jeb.
Yeah. They say, Jeb, you are no longer the trust fund baby of the head of the CIA and former president. You are now the man who has cut taxes on his own for himself and his friends several times. You're no longer Bush. You're Jeb.
All right, let's go through some That's of the questions. Jeb's question now, honestly, I can't even remember. Ben Carson was just, are you competent as a leader? Because you've expressed some stupidity in the past. And he said, no, I'm a very smart person. And that was that. Ted Cruz also, I think, got a sort of an easy tack. You've criticized Washington politicians. Do you really think you can get anything done doing that? I mean, this is a Republican race. And all he had to say is Washington politicians are horrible, and therefore I call them that. Marco Rubio, are you really qualified to be president? And you said Jeb was great once. Here we go. We're back up.
Questions now on illegal immigration. We kind of ended with a cliffhanger there, so let's continue the conversation. Governor Kasich, I know you don't like to talk about Donald Trump, but I do want to ask you about the merit of what he just said. When you say that the American government is stupid, that the Mexican government is sending criminals, that we're being bamboozled, is that an adequate response to the question of illegal immigration?
Chris, first of all, I was just saying to Chris Christie, they say we're outspoken. We need to take lessons from Donald Trump if we're really going to learn it. Hey, here's the thing about Donald Trump. Donald Trump's hitting a nerve in this country. He is. He's hitting a nerve. People are frustrated. They're fed up. They don't think the government is working for them. And for people that want to just tune them out, they're making a mistake. Now, he's got his solutions. Smart. Some of us have other solutions. You know, look, I balanced the federal budget as one of the chief architects when I was in Washington. Hadn't been done since. I was a military reformer. I took the state of Ohio from an $8 billion hole and a 350,000 job loss to a $2 billion surplus and a gain of 350,000 jobs.
Respectfully, can we talk about illegal immigration?
But the point is that we all have solutions. Mr. Trump is touching a nerve because people want the wall to be built. They want to see an end to illegal immigration. They want to see it, and we all do, but we all have different ways of getting there, and you're going to hear from all of us tonight about what our ideas are.
All right. Well, Senator Rubio, let me see if I can do better with you.
Yeah.
is it as simple as our leaders are stupid?
In other words, is anyone going to criticize Trump?
Illegals coming over are criminals?
Well, let me set the record straight on a couple of things. The first is the evidence is now clear that the majority of people coming across the border are not from Mexico. They're coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. Those countries are the source of the people that are now coming in its majority. I also believe we need a fence. The problem is if El Chapo builds a tunnel under the fence, we have to be able to deal with that too. And that's why you need an e-verified
system. I'm going to build a deeper fence.
You need an entry-exit tracking system.
That's why
all sorts
I take
of
money
things
from
to
El
prevent
Chapo.
Illegal immigration. But I agree with what Governor Kasich just said. People are frustrated. This is the most generous country in the world when it comes to immigration. There are 1 million people a year who legally immigrate to the United States. And people feel like we're being taken advantage of. We feel like despite our generosity, we are being taken advantage of. And let me tell you who never gets talked about in these debates. The people that call my office, who have been waiting for 15 years to come to the United States, and they paid their fees, and they hired a lawyer, and they can't get in, and they're wondering maybe they should come illegally. And so these are important issues, and we should address it. It's a serious problem that needs to be addressed. And otherwise, we're going to keep talking about this for the next 30 years like we have for the last 30 years.
Governor Walker.
You can't get
Governor
through
Walker
2 minutes
from 2002
without having run.
As recently
that is,
as 2013, just 2 years ago, you supported comprehensive immigration reform, including a path to citizenship. Now you say that was a quick reaction to something you hadn't really thought about and that you've changed your mind. Other than politics, could you explain why in the last 2 years you've changed your position on a path to citizenship? And are there other past positions that we shouldn't hold you to?
Yeah, well, Chris, I actually said it on your show earlier this year.
I
flat out said, I acknowledge that. I said I actually listened to the American people, and I think people across America want a leader who's actually going to listen to them. I talked to border state governors and other elected officials. I looked at how this president, particularly through last November, messed up the immigration system in this country. Most importantly, I listened to the people of America. I believe we need to secure the border. I've been to the border with Governor Abbott in Texas and others, seeing the problems that they have there. There's international criminal organizations penetrating our southern-based borders, and we need to do something about it. Secure the border, enforce the law, no amnesty, and go forward with a legal immigration system that gives priority to American working families and wages.
Senator Cruz, some 1,400 people submitted questions on this very hot topic of illegal
immigration with Trump
on Facebook, and a number of them
Chris Wallace
were about
has given
the murder
up, I guess.
Of Kate Steinle in San Francisco, allegedly shot down by an illegal. Doug Betancourt sent this question. Will you support Kate Steinle's law, which would impose a mandatory 5-year prison term for an illegal who's deported and then returns to this country, and will you defund sanctuary cities for violating federal law?
Chris, absolutely yes. And not only will I support it, I have authored Kate's law in the United States Senate and filed that legislation. I tried to get the Senate to vote to pass Kate's law on the floor of the Senate just 1 week ago, and the leader of our own party blocked a vote on Kate's law. You know, there was reference made to our leaders being stupid. It's not a question of stupidity. It's that they don't want to enforce the immigration laws, that there are far too many in the Washington cartel that support amnesty. President Obama's talked about fundamentally transforming this country.
Dude is good.
There's 7 billion
Washington
people across
cartel.
The face of the globe, many of whom want to come to this
talking
country. If they come legally, great. But if they come illegally, and they get amnesty, that is how we fundamentally change this country. And it really is striking. A majority of the candidates on this stage have supported amnesty. I have never supported amnesty, and I led the fight against Chuck Schumer's Gang of Eight amnesty legislation in the Senate.
Cruz coming through.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to switch topics now. And talk
they're
about
all saying the identical thing.
Yes.
And just being marginally
it better.
You've said
more
that
extreme
Senator Paul's
than the next
opposition
guy.
To the NSA's collection of phone records has made the United States weaker and more vulnerable, even going so far as to say that he should be called before Congress to answer for it if we should be hit by another terrorist attack. Do you really believe you can assign blame to Senator Paul just for opposing the bulk collection of people's phone records in the event of a terrorist attack?
Yes, I do. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm the only person on this stage who's actually filed applications under the Patriot Act, who have gone before the Foreign Intelligence Service Court, who has prosecuted and investigated and jailed terrorists in this country after September 11th. Five. I was appointed U.S. attorney by President Bush on September 10th, 2001. And the world changed enormously the next day. And it happened in my state. This is not theoretical to me. I went to the funerals. We lost friends of ours in the Trade Center that day. My own wife was two blocks from the Trade Center that day at her office, having gone through it that morning. When you actually have to be responsible for doing this, you can do it, and we did it for 7 years in my office, respecting civil liberties and protecting the homeland. And I will make no apologies ever for protecting the lives and the safety of the American people. We have to give more tools to our folks to be able to do that, not fewer, and then trust those people and oversee them to do it the right way. As president, that is exactly what I'll do.
Megan, may I respond? Go ahead, sir.
Megan.
I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from innocent Americans. The Fourth Amendment was what we fought the revolution over. John Adams said it was the spark that led to our war for independence. And I'm proud of standing for the Bill of Rights, and I will continue to stand for the Bill of Rights.
And Megan, that's a completely ridiculous answer. I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from other people. How are you supposed to know, Megan?
Get a warrant.
Let me tell you something.
Senator.
Go ahead, wait, Governor Christie, make your point.
Listen, Senator, you know, when you're sitting in a subcommittee just blowing hot air about this, you can say things like that. When you're responsible for protecting the lives of the American people, then what you need to do is to make sure that you use the system the way it's supposed to work.
You fundamentally misunderstand the Bill of Rights. Every time you did a case, you got a warrant from a judge. I'm talking about searches without warrants, indiscriminately of all Americans' records, and that's what I fought to end. I don't trust President Obama with our records. I know you gave him a big hug, and if you want to give him a big hug again, go right ahead.
There you go.
Nailing it.
Big hug.
Nailing it.
Big hug.
Just drop out now. Walk up the
stage.
That was
Rand Paul.
Senator Paul, you know the hugs that I remember? Are the hugs that I gave to the families who lost their people on September 11th.
Whoa.
Those are the hugs I remember. And those had nothing to do...
Look at that smirk from Rand Paul.
Those had nothing to do with politics.
That's pretty great.
Unlike what you're doing by cutting speeches on the floor of the Senate, then putting them on the internet within a half an hour to raise money for your campaign,
right,
and while still putting our country at risk.
All right, we're going to cut it off there. We have plenty more we want to get to.
Wow.
That was
Rand Paul's got
Rand
a
won.
Lemon.
Because I have a,
lemon
I'm,
face.
We're going to get
Rand
Governor,
won that.
But I really want to get to a Facebook questioner. His name is Alex Shalgren.
Yeah,
and
rush to
he
that.
Has the following question.
My question is, how would the candidates stop the treacherous actions of ISIS, ISIL, and its growing influence in the U.S. if they were to become president?
Senator Cruz, I want to talk to you about this because many of the Facebook users and the folks on Facebook wanted the candidates to speak to ISIS tonight. You asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs a question. What would it take to destroy
ISIS
in 90 days? He told you ISIS will only be truly destroyed once they are rejected by the populations in which they hide. And then you accused him of pushing Medicaid for the Iraqis. How would you destroy ISIS in 90 days?
Megan, we need a commander-in-chief that speaks the truth. We will not defeat radical Islamic terrorism so long as we have a president unwilling to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism.
You'll recall that's what Bobby Jindal said. I mean, this stuff is just like
when I asked General Jim Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, what would be required militarily to destroy ISIS, he said there is no military solution. We need to change the conditions on the ground so that young men are not in poverty and susceptible to radicalization. That, with all due respect, is nonsense. It's the same answer the State Department gave, that we need to give them jobs. What we need is a commander-in-chief who makes
who
clear,
will say
clear, if
things.
You join ISIS, if you wage jihad on America, then you are signing your death warrant.
You don't see it as an ideological problem?
Enjoying your support behind Donald Trump,
in addition to a military one.
Megan, of course it's an ideological problem. That's one of the reasons why I introduced the Expatriate Terrorist Act in the Senate that said if any American travels to the Middle East and joins ISIS, that he or she forfeits their citizenship so they don't use a passport to come back and wage jihad on Americans. Yes, it is ideological. And let me contrast President Obama, who at the prayer breakfast essentially acted as an apologist. He said, well, gosh, the Crusades, the Inquisitions, we need a president that shows the courage that Egypt's president al-Sisi did, a Muslim, when he called out the radical Islamic terrorists who are threatening the world.
Props for the out-of-the-box military dictator worship there. I wasn't expecting to see that. Al-Sisi's been on the circuit for a little while. Ted Cruz reached there.
About whether very knowing artful. What we know now,
I remember,
you would have invaded Iraq.
Megan.
No one remembers you, you boring bastard.
And ISIS, of course, is now
I forgot he was there.
You finally said no to the families of those who died in that war, who say they liberated a country and deposed a ruthless dictator. How do you look at them now and say your brother's war was a mistake?
Knowing what we know now, with faulty intelligence and not having security be the first priority when we invaded, it was a mistake. I wouldn't have gone in. However, for the people that did lose their lives and the families that suffered because of it, I know this full well because as governor of the state of Florida, I called every one of them that I could find to tell them that I was praying for them, that I cared about them, and it was really hard to do. And every one of them said that their child did not die in vain or their wife or husband did not die in vain. And so why it was difficult for me to do it was based on that. Here's the lesson that we should take from this, which relates to this whole subject.
Snorbor.
Barack Obama became president, and he abandoned Iraq. He left. And when he left, Al-Qaeda was done for. ISIS was created because of the void that we left. And that void now exists as a caliphate the size of Indiana. To honor the people that died, we need to stop the Iran agreement
die.
For sure, because the Iranian mullahs have their blood on their hands, and we need to take out ISIS with every tool at our disposal.
Governor Walker.
Sorry.
In February, you said that we needed to gain partners.
Tell me my
war
world was wrong. Suck
which
it,
Arab
Jeb.
Country, not already in the U.S.-led coalition, has the potential to be our greatest partner?
What about additional ones? We need to focus on the ones we have. You look at Egypt, probably the best relationship we've had in Israel, at least in my lifetime, incredibly important. You look at the Saudis. In fact, earlier this year, I met with Saudi leaders and leaders from the United Arab Emirates, and I asked them, what's the greatest challenge in the world today? Set aside the Iran deal. They said it's the disengagement of America. We are leading from behind under the Obama-Clinton doctrine. America's a great country. We need to stand up and start leading again. We'd have allies not just in Israel, but throughout the Persian Gulf.
Get back to
Dr.
Trump.
Carson.
Persian Gulf.
In one of his first acts as Commander-in-Chief, President Obama signed an executive order banning enhanced interrogation techniques in fighting terror. As president, would you bring back waterboarding?
Well, thank you, Megan. I wasn't sure I was going to get to talk again.
Oh. We have a lot for you. Don't worry. Fear not. You may rue that request.
All right.
All right. Now,
you know,
up.
What we do in order to get the information that we need is our business. And I wouldn't necessarily be broadcasting to everybody what we're going to do. You know, we
fighting Trump.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
We've gotten into
secret
this
plan to
this
torture.
Mindset yep. of fighting politically correct wars. There is no such thing as a politically correct war. And the left, of course, will say Carson doesn't believe in the Geneva Convention.
He's killing it.
Carson doesn't believe in fighting stupid wars. And what we have to remember is we want to utilize the tremendous intellect that we have in the military to win wars. And I've talked to a lot of the generals, a lot of our advanced people, and believe me,
advanced
if
people.
We gave them the mission, which is what the commander-in-chief does, they would be able to carry it out. And if we don't tie
Mr.
their hands
Carson,
behind their back, they will
human
do it
pyramid.
Extremely effectively.
They have brains. They have brains.
My series of questions deals with Obamacare and the role of the federal government. Mr. Trump, Obamacare is one of the things you call a disaster.
Complete disaster, yes.
Saying it needs to be repealed and replaced.
Correct.
Now, 15 years ago, you called yourself a liberal on health care. You were for a single-payer system, a Canadian-style system. Why were you for that then, and why aren't you for it now?
First of all, I'd like to just go back to one. In July of 2004, I came out strongly against the war with Iraq because it was going to destabilize the Middle East. And I'm the only one on the stage that knew that and had the vision to say it. And that's exactly what happened.
But
the Middle
Obamacare?
East became totally destabilized. So I just want to say, as far as single payer, it works in Canada. It works incredibly well in Scotland. It could have worked in a different age, which is the age you're talking about here. What I'd like to see is a private system without the artificial lines around every state. I have a big company with thousands and thousands of employees, and if I'm negotiating in New York or in New Jersey or in California, I have like one bidder. Nobody can bid. You know why? Because the insurance companies are making a fortune because they have control of the politicians, of course, with the exception of the politicians of the stage. But they have total control of the politicians. They're making a fortune. Get rid of the artificial lines and you will have yourself great plans. And then we have to take care of the people that can't take care of themselves, and I will do that through a different system.
Hey, Mr. Trump, hold on one second.
Newsflash.
I know, hold on, Senator.
Newsflash. The Republican Party's been fighting against a single-payer system for a decade. See, I think you're on the wrong side of this if you're still arguing for a single-payer system.
I'm not. Jail. I don't think you heard me. You're having a hard time tonight.
Mr. Trump, it's not just your past support for single-payer health care. You've also supported a host of other liberal policies. You've also donated to several Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton included, Nancy Pelosi. You explained away those donations, saying you did that to get business-related favors. And you said recently, quote, when you give, they do whatever the hell you want them to do.
You better believe it.
So what specifically did they do?
Perfect.
If I ask them, if I need them, you know, most of the people on this stage I've given to, just so you understand, a lot of money.
Not me.
Not me. But you're welcome to give me a check, Donald, if you'd like.
Many of them.
Actually, to be clear, he supported Charlie Crist.
Not Mike.
Charlie,
but I have.
Donald, if you end your campaign, I hope you will give to me.
Good.
Okay.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me, Governor. I will tell you that our system is broken. I give to many people. Before this, before 2 months ago, I was a businessman. I give to everybody. When they call, I give. And you know what? When I need something from them, 2 years later, 3 years later, I call them. They are there for me.
So what'd
and that's
get?
A broken system.
So what'd you get from Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I'll tell you what. With Hillary Clinton, I said, be at my wedding, and she came to my wedding. You know why? She had no choice because I gave. I gave to a foundation that, frankly, that foundation is supposed to do good. I didn't know her money would be used on private jets going all over the world. It was. But
Mr. Trump, thank you. Hold on. We're gonna move on. We'll come back to you, Governor Walker.
Just 1 second on this, though. We spend a lot of time talking about Hillary Clinton and pitting us back and forth. Let's be clear. We should be talking about Hillary Clinton on that last subject, because everywhere in the world that Hillary Clinton touched is more messed up today than before she and the
president. We have many questions to come. Many questions to come. Governor Huckabee, on Facebook, John Priccione asks this. Will you abolish or take away the powers and cut the size of the EPA, the IRS, the Department of Education? Now, broadly,
this is what
broadly,
is known
the size
the
of government is
question.
A big concern for Facebook users, Facebook persons, as
I
well as, obviously, conservatives. But year after year, decade after decade, there are promises from Republicans to shrink government. But year after year, decade after decade, it doesn't happen. In fact, it gets bigger, even under Republican politicians. So the question is, at this point, is the government simply too big for any one person, even a Republican, to shrink?
It's not too big to shrink. But the problem is we have a Wall Street to Washington axis of power that has controlled the political climate. The donor class feeds the political class, who does the dance that the donor class wants. And the result is federal government keeps getting bigger. Every person on this stage who has been a governor will tell you that the biggest fight they had was not the other party, wasn't even the legislature. It was the federal government, who continually put mandates on the states that we had to suck up and pay for. And the fact is, there are a lot of things happening at the federal level that are absolutely beyond the jurisdiction of the Constitution. This is power that should be shifted back to the states, whether it's the EPA. There is no role at the federal level for the Department of Education. And I'm still one who says that we can get rid of the Internal Revenue Service if we would pass the fair tax, which is a tax on consumption, rather than a tax on people's income, and move power back where the founders believed it should have been all along.
Dr. Carson, do you agree with
that? That tax, incidentally, highly regressive.
What I agree with is that we need a significantly changed taxation system. And the one that I've advocated is based on tithing, because I think God's a pretty fair guy. And he said, you know, if you give me a tithe, it doesn't matter how much you made. If you had a bumper crop, you don't owe me triple tithes. And if you'd had no crops at all, you don't owe me no tithes. So there must be something inherently fair about that. And that's why I've advocated a proportional tax system. You make $10 billion, you pay $1 billion. You make $10, you pay $1. And everybody gets treated the same way. And you get rid of the deductions, you get rid of all the loopholes. And
right. Governor Bush.
And I have a lot more to say about it.
We're going
to
come
back means
to
a flat tax,
Governor
right?
Bush, you
the same
are one
percentage
of the
for everybody.
On this stage who advocates
but
for
God will bless
core
it.
Education
That's how his is different.
Reading and math. A lot of people on this stage vigorously oppose federal involvement in education.
Ooh,
they say it should
core.
All be handled locally. President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, has said that most of the criticism of Common Core is due to a, quote, fringe group of critics. Do you think that's accurate?
No, I don't. And I don't believe the federal government should be involved in the creation of standards directly or indirectly, the creation of curriculum or content. That is clearly a state responsibility. I'm for higher standards, measured in an intellectually honest way, with abundant school choice, ending social promotion. And I know how to do this because as governor of the state of Florida, I created the first statewide voucher program in the country, the second statewide voucher program in the country, and the third statewide voucher program in the country. And we had rising student achievement across the board because high standards, robust accountability, ending social promotion in third grade, real school choice across the board, challenging the teachers' union and beating them is the way to go. And Florida's low-income kids had the greatest gains inside the country. Our graduation rate improved by 50%. That's what I'm for.
Senator Rubio, why is Governor Bush wrong on Common Core?
Well, first of all, I, too, believe in curriculum reform. It's critically important in the 21st century. We do need curriculum reform. And it should happen at the state and local level. That is where educational policy belongs. Because if a parent is unhappy with what their child is being taught in school, they can go to that local school board or their state legislature or their governor and get it changed. Here's the problem with Common Core. The Department of Education, like every federal agency, will never be satisfied. They will not stop with it being a suggestion. They will turn it into a mandate. In fact, what they will begin to say to local communities is, you will not get federal money unless you do things the way we want you to do it. And they will use Common Core or any other requirements that exist nationally to force it down the throats of our people in our states.
Do you agree with your old friend?
Of course.
You got forced down their throats.
Classic
He's
line.
Definitely
Take
my
a
friend.
Drink.
And I think the states ought to create these standards. And if states want to opt out of Common Core, fine. Just make sure your standards are high. Because today in America, a third of our kids, after we spend more per student than any country in the world other than a couple of rounding errors, to be honest with you, 30% are college and or career ready. If we are going to compete in this world we're in today, there's no possible way we can do it with lowering expectations and dumbing down everything. Children are going to suffer and families' hearts are going to be broken that their kids won't be able to get a job in the 21st century.
I think I said it when I said soft bigotry and low expectations.
Hear from Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. Stay with us.
Oh, what's all that mumbo jumbo? I said it a long time ago.
What would make you stand out as the best choice for the Republican nomination?
How do you intend to go about student loan reform?
What will be the first thing you will do to stimulate economic growth in our country and bring more jobs to the United States?
I give Jimmy Alcalan a tax break.
All right, that will be, Matt, turn down the volume on that. Hopefully that's apparently going to be the next round of questions are going to be about the economy.
I think this debate is proving that Jeb Bush is definitely not going to be the guy.
It is unbelievable how he has receded into the background. And I don't know what happened. Did John Kasich leave the building at one point?
They just forget. It's just too many people. Mike Huckabee disappeared for a while. Ben Carson, they completely ignored for a huge chunk.
Yep. And he came out, though. He has that very strong flat tax program that is blessed by God.
I thought Trump, it got a little rocky for a second there. For a second.
I think a little bit, but you
nothing
know,
nothing disastrous, but a touch rocky.
No, I mean, I think he still is. I think he's. I don't think any. He's lost any support.
No. Kasich though is the dude.
Yeah, the problem is that he's buried in this. I mean, he doesn't. There's
he's
nothing.
This year's Huntsman.
Oh no!
You
I mean, this guy
so?
Isn't no. Huntsman. He's far more conservative than Huntsman.
I mean, in terms of his place in the.
No, he's also just more.
The problem
you can
is,
see him up there. Huntsman was dull and stilted. Yeah. I mean, Kasich has some chops.
What's that? Why is that doing that? Uh-oh. What happened to our?
No, that's fine. That happened before.
Oh, okay. It was a fun exchange between Rand Paul and Chris Christie. They seem not to like each other.
And Chris Christie has this amazing effect of making me like Rand Paul.
Yeah, that was
bizarre and uncomfortable, and that makes me resent him even more.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to be in that position. What's going on there? Should I?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. We are watching a video of the debate. I hope that's okay with Fox. They seem to be a little bit upset when we include it in our broadcast. Charlie on the IM says, I think Bernie and Hillary are winning. Let's see. Majority Report listener said to me, oh, this afternoon, I missed this. I defended you on Twitter to someone who thought someone else is better. I said you were funnier and that you looked funnier. Thank you. I got a poll going on whether or not Rick Perry was on painkillers or other narcotics this time. Yes, I think that's fair. Is Sam drinking beer from Brooklyn Brewery? I am indeed. Noah's family is in the house and have supplied us with food and beer. They've been
they're the best.
Far too kind.
Not to be, I mean, to be honest with you, I hate to say this, but they're the best. They're great.
I don't know why you hate to say that.
No, I was just trying to Trumpify it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, I want to announce that we have, we are now contemplating having Noah's brother be our next intern. This has worked out so well. We're just going to cycle the you guys through every 2 or 3 months. And
it's time to have more kids,
two.
Guys.
And maybe we can work mom in, too. We'll just keep cycling everybody through.
Are we sure that this thing is all right? They're not back yet?
Not back yet.
All right. Just,
I assure you they're not back
yet. I think
yet.
I mean, okay. Rubio's doing fine. I think the problem with Rubio is Rubio kind of reminds me, and you tell me if this is a silly comparison because you would know him better than me, but he kind of reminds me of Harold Ford a little bit. Just in the sense that they're both, like, when every profile of you mentions how slick and polished you are, you're kind of not slick because
right,
it shouldn't
you're
be
coming
so
off,
obvious.
Well, I don't know. You know. I mean, I think Rubio clearly, and I got to say to his credit, is this is what he's going to do. And this is, you know, he's in many respects running for vice president, right? But he is trying to project youth and I'm a disruptor. That line of Rubio's is going to be pulled if he becomes vice president, where he said Hillary Clinton has a great CV. And you know that's going to be pulled. And frankly, you know, the idea that people are going to look to the Republican Party for youth and new ideas when he's just a younger guy saying everything.
Come in a narrow way. The nominee of this party, if they're going to win, has got to come at it in a big way, which is pro-growth. Which is balancing budgets. You know, we were talking about it. People were saying, could we do it? I was the chairman of the budget committee and the lead architect the last time it happened in Washington. And when we did it, we had great economic growth. We cut taxes and we had a big surplus. Economic growth is the key. Economic growth is the key to everything. But once you have economic growth, it is important that we reach out to people who live in the shadows, the people who don't seem to ever think they get a fair deal. And that includes people in our minority community. That includes people who feel as though they don't have a chance to move up. You know, America is a miracle country. And we have to restore the sense that the miracle will apply to you. Each and every one of the people in this country who's watching tonight, lift everybody, unite everybody, and build a stronger United States of America again. It will be and can be done.
I know that all of you would like to answer this question, but we're only going to ask one other candidate before we move on to a different subject, Dr. Carson. Basically, same question to you. If Hillary Clinton is the nominee and she comes at you with that kind of line of attack, how will you take her on?
Yes, presumably about welfare.
If Hillary is the candidate, which I doubt, that would be a dream come true. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, she is the epitome of the progressive, the secular progressive movement. And she counts on the fact that people are uninformed. The Alinsky model, taking advantage of useful idiots. Well, I just happen to believe that people are not stupid. And the way I will come at it is to educate people, help people to actually understand that is that progressive movement that is causing them the problems. You know, you look at the national debt and how it's being driven up. If I was trying to destroy this country, what I would do is find a way to drive wedges between all the people, drive the debt to an unsustainable level, and then step off the stage as a world leader and let our enemies increase while we decreased our capacity as a military person. And that's what she's doing.
That, he's basically just saying, Obama's
gentlemen,
a Manchurian candidate.
Now to the subject of the economy.
We haven't heard anything about Benghazi.
Money and the government. Yeah. And Governor Bush, I'm going to start with you. You have made a bold promise in your announcement. You have promised 4% economic growth and 19 million new jobs if you were fortunate enough to serve two terms as president. That many jobs, 19 million, would be triple what your father and your brother accomplished together. And 4% growth, the last president to average that was Lyndon Johnson during the height of the Vietnam War. So, question, how on earth, specifically, would you pull that off?
We've done it 27 times since World War II. I think we need to lift our spirits and have high, lofty expectations for this great country of ours. The new normal of 2% that the left is saying you can't do anything about is so dangerous for our country. There are 6 million people living in poverty today, more than when Barack Obama got elected. 6.5 million people are working part-time, most of whom want to work full-time. We've created rules and taxes on top of every aspiration of people, and the net result is we're not growing fast, income's not growing. A 4% growth strategy means you fix a convoluted tax code. You get in and you change every aspect of regulations that are job killers. You get rid of Obamacare and replace it with something that doesn't suppress wages and kill jobs. You embrace the energy revolution in our country. This president and Hillary Clinton, who can't even say she's for the XL pipeline, even after she's left, give me a break. Of course we're for it. We should be for these things to create high, sustained economic growth. And frankly, fixing our immigration system and turning it into an economic driver is part of this as well. We can do this.
Governor Walker, when you ran for governor of Wisconsin back in 2010, you promised that you would create 250,000 jobs in your first term, first 4 years. In fact, Wisconsin added barely half that and ranked 35th in the country in job growth. Now you're running for president and you're promising an economic plan in which everyone will earn a piece of the American dream. Given your record in Wisconsin, why should voters believe you?
Well, the voters in Wisconsin elected me last year for the third time because they wanted someone who aimed high, not aimed low. Before I came in, the unemployment rate was over 8%. It's now down to 4.6%. We more than made up for the jobs that were lost during the recession. And the rate in which people are working is almost 5 points higher than it is nationally. You know, people like Hillary Clinton think you grow the economy by growing Washington. One report last year showed that 6 of the top 10 wealthiest counties in America were in or around Washington, D.C. I think most of us in America understand that people, not the government, creates jobs. And one of the best things we can do is get the government out of the way, repeal Obamacare, rein in all the out-of-control regulations, put in place an all-the-above energy policy, get people the education and skills that they need to succeed, and lower the tax rate and reform the tax code. That's what I'll do as president, just like I did in Wisconsin.
Hasn't spoke, I think, since he was owned
Governor
by Rand
Christie,
Paul.
I want to engage you and Governor Huckabee in a subject that is a big issue in both of your campaigns, and that is entitlement reform. You say that
another fight.
You to save the system, you want to raise the retirement age, have to raise the retirement age, and to cut benefits for Social Security and Medicare. And you say that some of the candidates here on the stage are lying. Governor Huckabee says he can save Social Security and Medicare without doing any of that. Is he lying?
No, he's not lying. He's just wrong. I mean, so there's a difference. Listen, I'm the only guy on the stage who has put out a detailed 12-point plan on entitlement reform, and here's why. Because 71% of federal spending right now is on entitlements and debt service. 71%. And we have spent the last hour and 5 minutes talking about the other 29%, and no time on the 71%. And that makes no sense. Now, let me tell you exactly what we would do on Social Security. Yes, we'd raise the retirement age 2 years and phase it in over 25 years. That means we'd raise it 1 month a year for 25 years when we're all living longer and living better lives. Secondly, we would means test Social Security for those who are making over $200,000 a year in retirement income and who have $4 to $5 million in liquid assets saved. They don't need that Social Security check. Social Security is meant to be to make sure that no one who's worked hard and played by the rules and paid into the system grows old in poverty in America. If we don't deal with this problem, it will bankrupt our country or lead to massive tax increases, neither one that we want in this
country.
Wouldn't
it be great if Huckabee compared him to a Nazi now?
Governor Huckabee,
switched it up a little bit.
You say that changing entitlements, the kind of thing that Governor Christie is talking about, would be breaking a promise to the American people. And you say that you can keep those programs, save Social Security, save Medicare, without those kinds of reforms through a fair tax, which is a broad tax on consumption. Please explain to Governor Christie how that would work and how you could save these programs without the kind of painful reforms he says we need.
Let's all be reminded, 60 million Americans are on Social Security. 60 million. A third of those people depend on 90% of their income from Social Security. Nobody in this country is on Social Security because they made the decision when they were starting work at 14 that they wanted to entrust some of their money with the government. The government took it out of their check whether they wanted them to or not. And if a person goes to 65, they're going to spend 51 years with the government reaching into their pocket at every paycheck. Now, here's the point. Whose fault is it that the system is screwed up? Is it the recipients or is it the government? And if Congress wants to mess with the retirement program, why don't we let them start by changing their retirement program and not have one instead of talking about getting rid of Social Security and Medicare that was robbed $700 billion to pay for Obamacare? It's always that the government figures that they can do this off the backs of people, many of whom are poor and depend on that money. And I just think it's fundamentally lying to the people and stealing from them, and we shouldn't be doing it.
Well, Chris.
There you go. Huckabee managed not to answer that question.
Sure. And I don't disagree with ending Congress's retirement program. I'm a governor. I don't have a retirement program in my state, and I don't disagree with that. But here's the news for the American people. He's complaining about the lying and stealing. The lying and stealing has already occurred. The trust fund is filled with IOUs. We can't fix the problem by entering Congress's retirement. That's worth about this much. We need to go at the fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem is that this system is broken. It has been stolen from. We have been lied to. We need a strong leader to tell the truth and fix it.
All right, it's amazing. This is a guy who has also robbed the New Jersey state pension funds.
One of the reasons that Social Security is in so much trouble is the only funding stream comes from people who get a wage. The people who get wages is declining dramatically. Most of the income in this country is made by people at the top who get dividends and capital gains.
It's true.
The fair tax transforms the process by which we fund Social Security and Medicare because the money paid at consumption is paid by everybody, including illegals, prostitutes, pimps, drug dealers, all the people that are freeloading off the system now. That's why it ought to be a transformed system.
What?
All right. All right. Enough.
Illegals, prostitutes.
Trump.
He must have, like...
It's just like a word salad. Oh, and Megan just knocked him.
He's got to stand up, and he took his chance.
Odd couple routine of Megan and
Trump
Huckabee.
Trump corporations, casinos and hotels, have declared bankruptcy four times over the last quarter century. In 2011, you told Forbes magazine this, "I've used the laws of the country to my advantage." But at the same time, financial experts involved in those bankruptcies say that lenders to your companies lost billions of dollars. Question, sir, with that record, why should we trust you to run the nation's business?
because I have used the laws of this country, just like the greatest people that you read about every day in business have used the laws of this country, the chapter laws, to do a great job for my company, for myself, for my employees, for my family, etc. I have never gone bankrupt, by the way. I have never. But out of hundreds of deals that I've done, hundreds, on four occasions, I've taken advantage of the laws of this country, like other people. I'm not going to name their names because I'm not going to embarrass, but virtually every person that you read about on the front page of the business sections, they've used the law. The difference is when somebody else uses those laws, nobody writes about it. When I use it, they say, oh, Trump, Trump, Trump. The fact is, I built a net worth of more than $10 billion. I have a great, great company. I employ thousands of people, and I'm very proud of the job I did. Again, Chris, hundreds and hundreds of deals. Four times I've taken advantage of the laws, and frankly, so has everybody else in my position.
Well, sir, let's just talk about the latest example, which is Trump Entertainment Resorts, which went bankrupt in 2009. In that case alone, lenders to your company lost over $1 billion and more than 1,100 people were laid off.
Well,
is that the way that you run the country?
Let me tell you about the lenders. First of all, these lenders aren't babies. These are total killers. These are not the nice, sweet little people that you think, okay? You know, I mean, you're living in a world of the make-believe, Chris. You want to know the truth. And I had the good sense to leave Atlantic City, which, by the way, Caesars just went bankrupt. Every company, Chris can tell you, every company virtually in Atlantic City went bankrupt. Every company. And let me just tell you, I had the good sense, and I've gotten a lot of credit in the financial pages. 7 years ago, I left Atlantic City before it totally cratered, and I made a lot of money in Atlantic City, and I'm very proud of it. I want to tell you that. Very, very proud of it.
Senator,
and by the way, this country right now owes $19 trillion, and they need somebody like me to straighten out that mess.
That's right. Preach it.
Senator Rubio. Senator Rubio, more than 3,000 people sent us questions about the economy and jobs on Facebook. And here is a video question from Tanya Sialko from Philadelphia. Here she is.
Please describe one action you would do to make the economic environment more favorable for small businesses and entrepreneurs and anyone dreaming of opening their own business.
That's a great question.
Senator, how do you answer that?
That's a great question. First of all, it begins by having leaders that recognize that the economy we live in today is dramatically different from the one we had 5 years ago. It's an economy that now has placed us in global competition with dozens of other countries around the world. Now, the big companies that have connections with Washington, they can affect policies to help them. But the small companies like the one Tanya is talking about, they're the ones that are struggling. The first thing we need to do is we need to even out the tax code for small businesses so that we lower their tax rate to 25%, just as we need to lower it for all businesses. We need to have a regulatory budget in America that limits the amount of regulations on our economy. We need to repeal and replace Obamacare. And we need to improve higher education so that people can have access to the skills they need for 21st century jobs. And last but not least, we need to repeal Dodd-Frank. It is eviscerating small businesses and small banks. Over 40% of small and mid-sized banks that loan money to small businesses have been wiped out over since Dodd-Frank has passed. We need to repeal and replace Dodd-Frank. We need to make America fair again for all businesses, but especially those being run by small business owners.
Senator Rubio, thank you.
Gentlemen, another question for a few of you. Yesterday, President Obama criticized Republican lawmakers trying to block the Iran deal, calling them knee-jerk partisans, adding that hardliners in Iran who chant death to America were, quote, making common cause with the Republican caucus. Here's what two of your opponents on the 5 p.m. debate stage said about Iran.
I will tell you one thing. I would whole lot rather have Carly Fiorina over there doing our negotiation than John Kerry. Maybe we would have gotten a deal where we didn't give everything away. But the issue for us
is to have a Congress that stands up and says not only no, but hell no to this money going to a regime that is going to use it for terror.
When America does not lead, the world is a dangerous and a tragic place. This is a bad deal. Obama broke every rule of negotiation. Yes, our allies are not perfect, but Iran is at the heart of most of the evil that is going on in the Middle East through their proxy.
Now, I want to ask except a few for ISIS, this. First,
right?
Walker,
I mean, you've said minor that you would tear there. Up
the remember Iran how you guys were talking one. About ISIS
if this
for the
deal
entire debate?
Is undone,
Iran
what
fights
then?
Them.
Well, first off, let's remember. I still remember as a kid tying a yellow ribbon around the tree in front of my house during the 444 days that Iran held 52 Americans hostage. Iran is not a place we should be doing business with. To me, you terminate the deal on day one. You reinstate the sanctions authorized by Congress. You go to Congress and put in place even more crippling sanctions in place. And then you convince our allies to do the same. This is not just bad with Iran. This is bad with ISIS.
It's
it is tied together.
Fantasist.
And once and for all, we need a leader who's going to stand up and do something about it. It's yet another example of the failed foreign policy of the Obama-Clinton doctrine.
Senator
he's
Paul,
backed
would
off
you
his call for war
on
day
one.
I oppose the Iranian deal and will vote against it. I don't think that the president negotiated from a position of strength, but I don't immediately discount negotiations. I'm a Reagan conservative. Reagan did negotiate with the Soviets. But you have to negotiate from a position of strength, and I think President Obama gave away too much too early. If there's going to be a negotiation, you're going to have to believe somehow that the Iranians are going to comply. And I asked this question to John Kerry. I said, do you believe they're trustworthy? And he said, no. And I said, well, how are we going to get them to comply? I would have never released the sanctions before there was consistent evidence of compliance.
Governor Huckabee, what do you think about what Senator Paul just said?
Ronald Reagan said trust but verify. President Obama is trust but vilify. He trusts our enemies and vilifies everyone who disagrees with him. And the reason we disagree with him has nothing to do with party. It has to do with the incredibly dangerous place that this world is going to be as a result of a deal in which we got nothing. We didn't even get four hostages out. We got nothing. And Iran gets everything they want. We said we would have anywhere, anytime negotiations and inspections. We gave that up. We said that we would make sure that they didn't have any nuclear capacity. We gave that up. The president can't tell us what we got. I'll tell you what the world got. The world has a burgeoning nuclear power that didn't, as the Soviets say, we might defend ourselves in a war. What the Iranians have said is, we will wipe Israel off the face of the map, and we will bring death to America. When someone points a gun at your head and loads it, by God, you ought to take them seriously, and we need to take that seriously.
Unbelievable.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, we just lost our video feed.
Well, the first
so
debate night of the 2016 presidential campaign continues from Cleveland
so no
after a short
reenactment.
Timeout. Stick around. Social issues.
For the
next.
Time being. That's pretty crazy. Well, on what basis? Will you let Aaron know?
Yeah.
I'm going to copyright school on YouTube right now. They literally won't let us start open our thing. The following item is protected by copyright. Your name? No, right? Your original idea, your original YouTube video. Your cat.
I don't know what you're taking. That's not what I said.
Which one are you doing?
Well, you could just go ahead and do that one, I guess.
Maybe I didn't start at the right one. Go ahead, you do it, please.
All right.
This is unbelievable. We can't even get into our system now. Well, so Fox again took us down. They're just being jerks now.
Yeah. They maybe have a familiarity with some of the things that we've said about them on the air.
It's very possible.
Did I ever tell you about how they contacted me once to be on Fox and Friends? and I was going back and forth with the producer, and then I realized that a video of me went up literally like in the span of these emails where I called Brian Kilmeade the stupidest human being on planet Earth.
What's...
And I was like, I'm probably not going to make the final vet for this booking. Probably not going to work out. And I still went forward. I was like, yeah, totally. I'd love to be on. Sounds great. They're like, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. We're just going to give you one final checkup. And then the video went up.
Oh, my God.
Brian Kilmeade, the stupidest human being on planet Earth. He is, too. Just to be clear, I wasn't being in any way sort of hyperbolic or facetious. That guy is sort of mind-expandingly
stupid. Brian Kilmeade
stupid.
Is pretty dumb. All right, so yeah. Let's go over Triangle Bill. Trump said exactly what Sam Cedar said he would. Exactly. Yes, well, I mean, the Trump has been fairly predictable. And frankly, I have to say, everybody has been rather predictable.
Yes.
I would say it is somewhat of a low key relative to for them. We haven't heard the words Benghazi, for instance. Now, imagine we will. We've barely heard much about Clinton. We haven't heard much about. It's been. I'm trying to think what else. Fast and Furious.
Nothing.
IRS scandal.
The Rand Christie thing was by far the yep. most sort of explosive.
What is clear, though, is that the dynamic with Trump is also sort of going the way that we've been talking about. No one is challenging Donald Trump really on anything. There was a little bit of that Clinton thing up front. But not much. And beyond that, on a policy standpoint, they tried to ding him on single payer. That didn't really stick. The only thing that I think he seemed a little bit defensive about was the bankruptcies. He repeated himself 3 or 4 times about taking advantage of the law. It seems to me he needed to say that once and then just say, like, look, business. If you knew anything
but
about business.
That was actually great because that was very Trumpian. Like he put Chris Wallace in his place and he got him looked like a moron. And
he
that,
did.
So he's still.
You're living in a fantasy world. Yeah. He could have gone further. He could have said to Chris Wallace, Chris, you know nothing about business. You've been sitting in a. Oh, here we go. We're back up.
To Planned Parenthood while you were a director. How could you not know about these well-publicized donations? And if you did know, how could you help a charity so openly committed to abortion rights?
I joined the Bloomberg Foundation because of Mike Bloomberg's shared commitment for meaningful education reform. That's why I was on it. We never had a debate about the budget. It was presented and we approved it, not item by item. Here's my record. As governor of the state of Florida, I defunded Planned Parenthood. I created a culture of life in our state. We were the only state to appropriate money for crisis pregnancy centers. We expanded dramatically the number of adoptions out of our foster care system. We did parental notification laws. We ended partial birth abortion. We did all of this, and we were the first state to do a Choose Life license plate. Now 29 states have done it, and tens of millions of dollars have gone to create a culture where more people, more babies are adopted.
But did you know?
No, I didn't know, but it doesn't matter. I was working on this board because of the education. My record is clear. My record as a pro-life governor is not in dispute. I am completely pro-life, and I believe that we should have a culture of life. It's informed by my faith from beginning to end. And I did this not just as it related to unborn babies. I did it at the end-of-life issues as well. This is something that goes way beyond politics. And I hope one day that we get to the point where we respect life in its fullest form across the board.
Senator Rubio, you favor a rape and incest exception to abortion bans. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York just said yesterday those exceptions are preposterous. He said they discriminate against an entire class of human beings. If you believe that life begins at conception, as you say you do, how do you justify ending a life just because it begins violently through no fault of the baby?
Well, Megan, first of all, I'm not sure that that's a correct assessment of my record. I would go on to add that I believe all
humans. You don't favor a rape and an incest exception.
I have never said that, and I have never advocated that. What I have advocated is that we pass a law in this country that says all human life, at every stage of its development, is worthy of protection. In fact, I think that law already exists. It's called the Constitution of the United States. And let me go further. I believe that every single human being is entitled to the protection of our laws, whether they can vote or not, whether they can speak or not, whether they can hire a lawyer or not, whether they have a birth certificate or not. And I think future generations will look back at this history of our country and call us barbarians for murdering millions of babies who we never gave them a chance to live.
Mr. We never
Trump,
gave them a chance to live.
In 1999, you said you were, quote, very pro-choice, even supporting partial birth abortion. You favored an assault weapons ban as well. In 2004, you said in most cases you identified as a Democrat. Even in this campaign, your critics say you often sound more like a Democrat than a Republican, calling several of your opponents on this stage things like clowns and puppets.
They are.
When did you actually become a Republican?
I don't think they like me very much. I'll tell you what. I've evolved on many issues over the years, and you know who else has is Ronald Reagan evolved on many issues. And
perfect.
I am pro-life. And if you look at the question, I was in business. They asked me a question as to pro-life or choice. And I said, if you let it run, that I hate the concept of abortion. I hate the concept of abortion. And then since then, I've very much evolved. And what happened is friends of mine years ago were going to have a child, and it was going to be aborted, and it wasn't aborted, and that child today is a total superstar, a great, great child. And I saw that, and I saw other instances, and I am very, very proud to say that I am pro-life. As far as being a Republican is concerned, I come from a place, New York City, which is virtually, I mean, it's almost exclusively Democrat. And I have really started to see some of the negatives. As an example, and I have a lot of liking for this man, but the last number of months of his brother's administration were a catastrophe. And unfortunately, those few months gave us President Obama, and you can't be happy about that.
There you go.
Governor Bush, I want to ask you, on the subject of name-calling of your fellow candidates, a story appeared today quoting an anonymous GOP donor who said you called Mr. Trump a clown, a buffoon,
don't
something
bring up
else that cannot be repeated on television.
None of which is true.
Is it true?
No, it's not true. But I have said that Mr. Trump's language is divisive. I want to win. I want one of these people here, or the ones at 5 o'clock, to be the next president of the United States. We're not going to win by doing what Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton do each and every day, dividing the country, saying, creating a grievance kind of environment. We're going to win when we unite people with a hopeful, optimistic message. I have that message because I was a governor of a state that saw people lifted up because we had high sustained economic growth. Our economy grew at double the rate of the nation. We created 1.3 million jobs. We led the nation 7 out of those 8 years. We were only one of two states that went to AAA bond rating. I cut taxes $19 billion. If you do that and apply conservative principles the right way, you create an environment where everybody rises up. That's how we're going to win. Campaigning in places to give people hope that their life is better because too many people are suffering today in America.
Mr. Trump, 30 seconds.
Well, first of all, Jeb, I am very happy that you denied that, and I appreciate that very much. I mean, he's a true gentleman. He really is. The one thing he did say about, and I mean that, the one thing he did say about me, however, was my tone, and I also understand that. But when you have people that are cutting Christians' heads off, when you have a world at the border and at so many places that it's medieval times, we've never, it's almost got to be as bad as it ever was in terms of the violence and the horror. We don't have time for tone. We have to go out and get the job done.
Subject of gay marriage and religious liberty. Governor Kasich, if you had a son or daughter who was gay or lesbian, how would you explain to them your opposition to same-sex marriage?
Well, look, I'm an old-fashioned person here, and I happen to believe in traditional marriage. But I've also said the court has ruled.
But how would you explain to your child?
Megan, the court has ruled, and I said we'll accept it. And guess what? I just went to a wedding of a friend of mine who happens to be gay. Because somebody doesn't think the way I do,
doesn't mean that I can't care about them or I can't love
Savvy.
Them. So
yeah.
If one of my daughters happened to be that, of course I would love them and I would accept them because, you know what, that's what we're taught when we have strong faith. So issues like that are planted to divide us. I think the simple fact of the matter is, and this is where I would agree with Jeb, and I've been saying it all along, we need to give everybody a chance, treat everybody with respect, and let them share in this great American dream that we have, Megan. So, look, I'm going to love my daughters. I'm going to love them no matter what they do, because you know what? God gives me unconditional love. I'm going to give it to my family and my friends and the people around me.
There you go.
Guys got game.
Senator Paul, in the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage, Carol Fox on Facebook wants to know the following. Quote, what will you do to ensure Christians are not prosecuted for speaking out against gay marriage? And will Christians be forced to conduct business that conflicts with their religious beliefs?
Look, I don't want my marriage or my guns registered in Washington.
Jeez.
And if people have an opinion that's a religious opinion that is heartily felt, obviously they should be allowed to practice that, and no government should interfere with them. One of the things that really got to me was the thing in Houston where you had the government, the mayor, actually trying to get the sermons of ministers. When the government tries to invade the church to enforce its own opinion on marriage, that's when it's time to resist.
Governor Walker. Many in the Black Lives Matter movement and beyond believe that overly aggressive police officers targeting young African Americans is the civil rights issue of our time.
I don't care for black people, Megan.
Here we go.
Do you agree? And if so, how do you plan to address it? If not, why not?
Well, I think the most important thing we can do when it comes to policing is something you've had a guest on who's a friend of mine, Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, who's talked to me many times about this in the past. It's about training. It's about making sure that law enforcement professionals, not only on the way in to their positions, but all the way through their time, have the proper training, particularly when it comes to use of force, and that we protect and stand up and support those men and women who are doing their jobs in law enforcement. And for the very few that don't, that there are consequences to show that we treat everyone the same here in America.
Thank you.
Also, coming up, don't like black people that much.
That's it. That's the whole.
President Obama's foreign policy and these guys and their better ideas.
Excuse me. Coming Mr. up. Trump would like to share about how much black people like him now.
Wow.
It's very rude. What?
We're in big trouble on our YouTube.
That's the strike that took away the, you saw?
Yeah, it took away everything.
Aaron thinks he'll be overturned.
Okay, good.
Hopefully.
Wow. That was, we really got, Fox really came down on us.
Guys, we need to contribute now.
I think it's really,
to liberal media.
I think it's really hard to
argue.
Whoa.
That was a loud commercial.
Now we're repaying Fox by playing their ads.
Yes, and they don't appreciate that, apparently.
Would you, should we tell people who the guacamole was standing in for at this point, now that the stream is down?
It was,
well, the audio stream is down. Oh, well.
I mean, it was a visual site.
Oh, well, I mean, I think people already guessed that.
I would hope so.
Of course, it was Chris Christie.
Ben Carson.
Oh, Ben Carson?
Yeah, of course. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, obviously Chris Christie.
I mean,
it's
really whoever you want it to be. Everybody but Trump. I mean, because we have an explicit picture
Trump
of Trump.
Trump has been that mountain that they have been attempting to scale.
You know, it's interesting because I think for the most part, nobody has made an ass of themselves, let's say, like Rick Perry did. I'm talking from the perspective of
earlier tonight
of conservatives, like Rick Perry, even tonight, where Rick Perry sort of famously did. But there's no breakout here. I think Kasich is going to pick up a couple of points from tonight. There's no doubt about it. The guy clearly is talking to an audience, like he hits those quadrants. I mean, I think he really is well positioned to become the compromise candidate against Trump down the road. Did Ted Cruz leave the building?
I don't know what happened to him, but he was doing, I think Ted Cruz has been doing a very good job.
At one point, it seems like they opened a trap door and he's gone.
Yeah.
But
like, Ted, you must get back on the stage.
I mean, Ted Cruz really seemed to have been missing in the last.
And someone definitely told
minutes.
Rand Paul to come out. Like
Jeb
one of
Bush.
His, one of his advisors was like, look, I'm going to jail, buddy. And before I do that, you got to go out aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rand Paul really is running for the Senate in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And Jeb is, I think this is his way of, like, you know, sort of beefing up against going after Trump. He knows he's never getting any Trump support. And he's trying to create some support somewhere. But I you know, and I also think the big thing that coming out of this is that if I'm an establishment, I am the GOP establishment. You just can't look at Jeb Bush and think this guy is going to beat the people on this stage. He's not particularly sharp. There's nothing he's saying that I mean, I feel like he has spoken as much as anybody in this debate. And frankly, I can barely tell you what he said.
He's tremendously boring. He's not that. I mean, the rumor with him was, the story with him was always that, oh, he doesn't have the sort of jocular charisma of his brother, but he's the really smart one. Where's the evidence of this great intellect anywhere?
And just in terms of, like, his issues, like, I couldn't tell you. I you know, everything was blunted with him. And though his issues, he seems to be in the same place as just about everybody. So I don't know. I think Jeb Bush gets hurt in this. I think Walker is probably a net positive for him because he didn't come off as an idiot, frankly. And I think there was some serious concern that he might. He was also, you know, rather measured. I think Rubio has done pretty well for himself.
Chris Christie's out.
I mean, I think Chris Christie came off as sort of whiny, and
yep.
He's not even tough guy.
No,
just
no,
sort of
he's just
evaporated.
Whiny. Donald Trump,
and
took
I think
his
Trump
spot.
Probably added maybe a couple of points. I certainly don't think that anybody would have an issue. Anybody who was supporting Trump before is not going to support him now. It's conceivable you'll see everybody rise, you know, a point or two. But I'd be hard-pressed to imagine that people dramatically change their perspective on this. I'm getting a weird...
Yeah, it's back. I don't know why.
It is?
Yeah, I don't know why their thing's not back.
Oh, boy, we got a problem. Bear with us, folks. I was a little bit.
Trump said, I would say Obama is incompetent, but I don't want to do that
okay,
because
we're
that's
we're
not
back
nice.
Up. We're back up.
Of course they have. And over the last 6.5 years, we've seen the consequences. Is a disaster. We have abandoned and alienated our friends and allies, and our enemies are stronger. Radical Islam is on the rise. Iran's on the verge of acquiring a nuclear weapon. China is waging cyber warfare against America. Russia, General Soleimani, you just mentioned, the Iranian general, is the head of the al-Quds forces. He's directly responsible
Quds.
For the murder of over 500 American servicemen in Iraq. And part of this Iranian deal was lifting the international sanctions on General Soleimani. The day General Soleimani flew back from Moscow to Iran was the day we believe that Russia used cyber warfare against the Joint Chiefs. We need a new commander-in-chief that will stand up to our enemies and that will have credibility. It is worth emphasizing that Iran released our hostages in 1981, the day Ronald Reagan was sworn into office.
Dr. Carson,
so, Ted Cruz would
in
like
August
to,
of 2012,
cut some
President
type of weird
Obama
deal with the Iranians.
Declared that if Syrian President Bashar al-Assad
much worse deal
used
than the
chemical
Obama
weapons,
deal.
Quote, that's a red line for us and that there would be enormous consequences. 1 year later, with overwhelming evidence that Assad had in fact used chemical weapons and crossed that red line, President Obama declined to use military force against the Assad regime.
As president, would you have used military force there?
Well, what we have to stop and think about is the fact that we have weakened ourselves militarily to such an extent that it affects all of our military policies. Our Navy is at its smallest size since 1917. Our Air Force since 1940. In recent testimony, the Commandant of the Marine Corps said half of the non-deployed units were not ready. And, you know, the sequester is cutting the heart out of our personnel. Our generals are retiring because they don't want to be part of this. And at the same time, our enemies are increasing. Our friends can't trust us anymore. You know, Ukraine was a nuclear-armed state. They gave away their nuclear arms with the understanding that we would protect them. We won't even give them offensive weapons. You know, we turned our back on Israel, our ally. You know, and in a situation like that, of course, Obama's not going to be able to do anything. I would shore up our military first, because if you don't get the military right, nothing else is going to work.
Governor Walker, as president, what would you do if Russian President Vladimir Putin started a campaign to destabilize NATO allies, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, mirroring the actions Putin took at the early days of Ukraine?
Well, first off, per the cyber attack with Russia the other day, it's sad to think right now, but probably the Russian and Chinese government know more about Hillary Clinton's email server than do the members of the United States Congress.
Zynga.
And that has put our national security at risk. If I'm president, he won't think about that. You know, Putin believes in the old Lenin adage that you probe with bayonets. When you find mush, you push. When you find steel, you stop. Under Obama and Clinton, we found a lot of mush over the last few years. We need to have a national security that puts steel in front of our enemies. I would send weapons to Ukraine. I would work with NATO to put forces on the eastern border of Poland and the Baltic nations. And I would put in place back in the missile defense system that we had in Poland and in the Czech Republic.
Governor,
we would find steel.
Governor Huckabee, the culture of the American military is definitely changing. Women are moving into combat roles. Don't ask, don't tell has obviously been dropped. And now Defense Secretary Ashton Carter recently directed the military to prepare for a moment when it is welcoming transgender persons to serve openly. As Commander-in-Chief, how would you handle that?
The military is not a social experiment. The purpose of the military is kill people and break things. It's not to transform the culture by trying out some ideas that some people think would make us a different country and more diverse. The purpose is to protect America. I'm not sure how paying for transgender surgery for soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines makes our country safer. We've reduced the military by 25% under President Obama. The disaster is that we've forgotten why we have a military. The purpose of it is to make sure that we protect every American, wherever that American is. And if an American is calling out for help, whether it's in Benghazi or at the border,
bingo,
then we ought to be able to answer it. We've not done that because we've decimated our military. We're flying B-52s. The most recent one that was put in service was November of 1962. A lot of the B-52s we're flying, we've only got 44 that are in service, combat ready. And the fact is, most of them are older than me.
Where would we use B-52 bombers at this point? Like, what
Senator
is it
Paul,
exactly that we...
budget you proposed,
yeah, Russia,
Senator,
right,
cut all financial aid to Israel. You have since changed your view on that issue. What made you change your mind?
Well, let's be clear. I'm the only one on the stage who actually has a five-year budget that balances. I've put pencil to paper, and I've said I would cut spending, and I've said exactly where. Each one of my budgets has taken a meat axe to foreign aid, because I think we ought to quit sending it to countries that hate us. I think we ought to quit sending it to countries that burn our flag. Israel's not one of those, but even Benjamin Netanyahu said that ultimately they will be stronger when they're independent. My position is exactly the same. We shouldn't borrow money from China to send it anywhere, but why don't we start with eliminating aid to our enemies?
Okay, but you still say that Israel could be one of the countries that is cut from financial aid.
I still say exactly what my original opinion is. Do you borrow money from China to send it to anyone? Out of your surplus, you can help your allies, and Israel is a great ally, and this is no particular animus of Israel. But what I will say, and I will say over and over again, we cannot give away money we don't have. We do not project power from bankruptcy court. We're borrowing $1 million a minute. It's got to stop somewhere.
It's not just Israel, it's the Jews, generally.
Well, listen, you know, if we want to deal with these issues, we have to deal with them in a way that makes sense. I agree with what Dr. Carson said earlier. The first thing we need to do to make America stronger is to strengthen our military. And I put out a really specific plan. No less than 500,000 active duty soldiers in the Army. No less than 185,000 active duty Marines in the Marine Corps. Bring us to a 350-ship Navy again and modernize the Ohio-class of submarines. And bring our Air Force back to 2,600 aircraft that are ready to go. Those are the kind of things that are going to send a clear message around the world. Those are the things that we need to start working on immediately to make our country stronger and make it better. Those are the things that we need to be able to be doing. And as we move towards dealing with foreign aid, I don't disagree with Senator Paul's position that we shouldn't be funding our enemies. But I absolutely believe that Israel is a priority to be able to fund and keep them strong and safe after 8 years of this administration.
Governor, thank you.
Brett, can I jump in on this one?
I've really got to get some money from Sheldon Adelson. Could I
have stand you by? Because after the break, we're going to let the candidates make their closing statements, their final thoughts, and God. Stay tuned for that.
Wait, it's already 11:15. It's going
2 hours.
Oh, wow.
At DeVry University.
Wow. Fox just took down the Sky News feed.
Sky News was live streaming the GOP debate, too. The UK News Corp owned Sky News, pretty much.
All right. Well, that's good. I mean, but the problem is that hopefully we'll get restored.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Even if that one last one just gets removed and the first one remains, we're good.
Yeah. But we'll see. Hopefully we'll get it taken care of. Wow. So we are going late. I didn't realize this was going to be a 2-hour debate. They really, we got completely hoodwinked. Let me get in touch with Cliff. We're going to have Cliff Schechter on at about 11:05, it appears now. You know, it is also fascinating. I guess Rand Paul, slight difference on the NSA authorities. But beyond that, has there been any major disagreements about policy at all?
No.
I mean, I guess Ben Carson says that we need, if we're going to come up with a tax plan, God should be in charge of it, or at least bless it in some fashion. I don't know if that's a dispute. I don't know if you could make the argument that everyone else has a secular tax plan, and only Ben Carson's is divine in some fashion. But beyond that, it is just an argument, it seems to me, of who can pursue these, it's hard to call these policies. They conflate Iran and ISIS. And granted, they both start with an I, and they're both in the Middle East. They all seem to support a flat tax. Lower taxes, that's no big surprise. I guess there was some arguments as to how far they would go in terms of outlawing abortion. Of course, they weren't asked the real question, do you send doctors and women who get abortions or perform abortions, do you send them to jail? Which is really
Well, didn't Huckabee even said he'd send in, like, the military to stop women from getting abortions?
He said that the other day.
We're back.
An interesting closing question from Chase Norton on Facebook, who wants to know this of the candidates. I want to know if any of them have received a word from God on what they should do and take care of first. Senator
what are
Cruz,
you talking
start
about?
From you. Any word from God?
Well, I am blessed to receive a word from God every day in receiving the scriptures and reading the scriptures, and God speaks through the Bible. I'm the son of a pastor and an evangelist, and I've described many times how my father, when I was a child, was an alcoholic. He wasn't a Christian, and my father left my mother and left me when I was just 3 years old, and someone invited him to Clay Road Baptist Church, and he gave his heart to Jesus, and it turned him around, and he got on a plane, and he flew back to my mother and me.
More money with Jesus.
I would also note that the scripture tells us, you shall know them by their fruits. We see lots of campaign conservatives. But if we're going to win in 2016, we need a consistent conservative, someone who's been a fiscal conservative, a social conservative, a national security conservative. There are real differences among the candidates on issues like amnesty, like Obamacare, like religious liberty, like life and marriage. And I have been proud to fight and stand for religious liberty, to stand against Planned Parenthood, to defend life for my entire career. And I will be proud to continue to do so as president of the United States.
Well, that
States.
Just makes my point. Of those three things he mentioned, where was their difference? I guess Kasich said, I don't hate gay people.
Well, Megan, my father was a mailman. His father was a coal miner. My mother's mother could barely speak English, and their son today stands on this podium in the great state of Ohio, not only as the governor, but a candidate for president of the United States. I do believe in miracles. You know, I've had a lot of elections. But my elections are really not about campaigns. I tell my people that these are about a movement. And a movement to do what? To restore common sense, a movement to do things like provide economic growth, and a movement not to let anybody be behind. You know, today the country's divided. You ask a question about the police and the difficulty in communities. We've got to unite our country again, because we're stronger when we are united and we are weaker when we are divided. And we've got to listen to other people's voices, respect them. But keep in mind, and I believe in terms of the things that I've read in my lifetime, the Lord's not picking us. But because of how we respect human rights, because that we are a good force in the world, he wants America to be strong. He wants America to succeed, and he wants America to lead.
Not necessarily.
Nothing's more important to me than my family, my faith, and my friends.
Governor Walker, same question.
Well, thanks, Megan. I'm certainly an imperfect man, and it's only by the blood of Jesus Christ that I've been redeemed from my sins. So I know that God doesn't call me to do a specific thing. God hasn't given me a list, the Ten Commandments, if you will, of things to act on the first day. What God calls us to do is follow his will. And ultimately, that's what I'm going to try and do. And I hope people have seen in my state, even in the big challenges I took on when I had over 100,000 protesters in around our Capitol trying to do what I thought was the right thing, it wasn't just how I took on those political battles. It was ultimately how I acted, not responding in kind, not lashing out, but just being decent going forward and living my life in a way that would be a testimony to him and his faith.
Just
our faith.
Calmly destroying
Senator Rubio,
people's lives.
I want to ask you the same question, but I do want to mention
that's right.
A woman just came here to the stage and asked, what about the veterans? I want to hear more about what these candidates are going to do for our nation's veterans. So I put the question to you about God and the veterans, which you may find to be related.
Well, first, let me God say, I think veterans? God has blessed us. He's blessed the Republican Party with some very good candidates. The Democrats can't even find one.
Lame. I never realized how big his ears were before. No, I'm just getting that.
And
look
I believe
that.
God
Whoa.
Has blessed our country. This country's been extraordinarily
like
blessed.
Spock
and we've
ears,
honored
yo.
That blessing, yeah. And that's why God has continued to bless us. And he's blessed us with young men and women willing to risk their lives and sometimes die in uniform for the safety and security of our people. Unfortunately, today we have a VA that does not do enough for them. I am proud that last year we helped change the law. We changed the law to give the power to the VA secretary, the ability to fire any executive that isn't doing their job. And it is outrageous they've only fired one person to date. When I'm president of the United States, we're going to have a VA that cares more about our veterans than about the bureaucrats who work at the VA.
Dr. Carson, question to you about God and his role, but also one of the issues that the public was very interested in and we touched on it earlier, is race relations in this country and how divided we seem right now. And what, if anything, you can do, you would do, as the next president to help heal that divide?
Well, I think the bully pulpit is a wonderful place to start healing that divide. You know, we have the purveyors of hatred who take every single incident between people of two races and try to make a race war out of it and drive wedges into people. And this does not need to be done. What we need to think about instead, you know, I was asked by an NPR reporter once, why don't I talk about race that often? I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she thought that was a strange response. And you say, I said, you see, when I take someone to the operating room, I'm actually operating on the thing that makes them who they are. The skin doesn't make them who they are. The hair doesn't make them who they are. And it's time for us to move beyond that, because, you know, our strength as a nation comes in our unity. We are the United States of America, not the divided states. And those who want to destroy us are trying to divide us, and we shouldn't let them do it.
Thank you.
Now,
Herman Cain just tweeted, blah, 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 blah.
To make a closing statement.
I missed that, dude.
For this debate. We'll start with Ohio Governor John Kasich.
What? You know, tonight we hear about what people want to do. I want to tell you what I've done. I was a member of the Armed Services Committee for 18 years. I spent a big chunk of my life studying national security issues and our role in the world. Number two, I was the chairman of the House Budget Committee and one of the chief architects the last time we balanced the budget, and it was the first time we'd done it since man walked on the moon. We had a $5 trillion surplus, and we cut taxes. I spent 10 years in the private sector actually learning how business works.
Lehman Brothers.
And now I'm the governor of Ohio, and I inherited a state that was on the brink of dying. And we've turned it all around with jobs and balanced budgets and rising credit and tax cuts, and the state is unified, and people have hope again in Ohio.
Governor Christie.
Well, thank you, Megan. Listen, I was born into a middle-class family in New Jersey. My dad came home from serving in the Army after having lost his father, worked in the Breyers ice cream plant in Newark, New Jersey, was the first person to graduate from college, put himself through college at night. My mom was a secretary. I was appointed United States Attorney on September 10th, 2001, and spent the next 7 years of my career fighting terrorism and putting terrorists in jail. I'm a conservative, pro-life governor in a state where it's really tough to be both. In a state like New Jersey with lots of Democrats, but still we cut taxes, we balanced budgets, we fought the teachers union. This president has had weak leadership, which has led to bad choices. We got to stop worrying about being loved and start worrying about being respected, and that's exactly how I'll lead our country.
Senator Paul, closing statement.
Go away.
I'm a different kind of Republican.
Jeez.
I've introduced a five-year balanced budget. I've introduced the largest tax cut in our history. I stood for 10 and a half hours on the Senate floor to defend your right to be left alone.
Wow.
I've also gone to Chicago. I've gone to Detroit. I've been to Ferguson. I've been to Baltimore because I want our party to be bigger, better, and bolder. And I'm the only one that leads Hillary Clinton in five states that were won by President Obama. I'm a different kind of Republican.
Senator Marco Rubio.
Thank you. You know, both of my parents were born into poor families on the island of Cuba. They came to America because it was the only place where people like them could have a chance. Here in this country, they never made it big, but the very purpose of their life was to give us the chance to do all the things they never could. My father was a bartender. And the journey from the back of that bar to this stage tonight, to me, that's the essence of the American dream. It's what makes our nation different.
Nation?
And I'm running for president because I want that to still be possible for the people trying to do that now. I run for president because I believe that we can't just save the American dream. We can expand it to reach more people and change more lives than ever before. And that's why I'm asking for your vote, so we can make America greater than it's ever been and make of this century a new American century.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, boy.
Senator Ted Cruz.
If I'm elected president, let me tell you about my first day in office. The first thing I intend to do is to rescind every illegal and unconstitutional executive action taken by Barack Obama.
Yes,
the next thing I intend to do is instruct the Department of Justice to open an investigation into these videos and to prosecute Planned Parenthood for any criminal violations. The next thing I intend to do is instruct the Department of Justice and the IRS to start persecuting religious liberty. I then intend to cancel the Iran deal and finally move the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. I will keep my word. My father fled Cuba, and I will fight to defend liberty because my family knows what it's like to lose it.
Dr. Carson, closing statement.
To lose it.
Well, I haven't said anything about me being the only one to do anything, so let me try that. I'm
what?
The only one to separate Siamese twins. The only
he is a egomaniac on stage.
The only
egomaniacs.
One to operate on babies while they were still in the mother's womb. The only one to take out half of a brain, although you would think if you go to Washington that someone had beat me to it.
Oh, damn.
This guy's great. This guy's great.
I'm very hopeful that I'm not the only one who's willing to pick up the baton of freedom, because freedom is not free, and we must fight for it every day. Every one of us must fight for it, because we're fighting for our children and the next generation.
I'll tell you something. On day two of these Republican presidencies, they're all going to have to take a nap.
It seems like this election has been a whole lot about a person who's very high in the polls, but doesn't have a clue about how to govern. A person who has been filled with scandals.
Yeah, he's going to do it, Hillary.
And who could not lead.
You're right.
And of course, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton.
Noah's dad, Mr. Truesdale, nailing the call on that one.
I think America is in trouble, but it's not beyond repair. But it's going to take leadership who sees the greatness of this country and who believes that once again we can be one nation under God. I'll be my best to do that, and thank you for your support.
Megan with the tinning soft spot for Mike
Thanks.
Huckabee.
I'm a guy with a wife and two kids and a Harley. One article called me aggressively normal.
I'm a cool guy.
I ran for governor because I was worried about my kids' future. Then I took on the big government union bosses, and we won. They tried to recall me, and we won. They target us again, and we won. We balanced the budget, cut taxes, and turned our state around with big, bold reforms. It wasn't too late for Wisconsin, and it's not too late for America. That's why I asked for your vote.
Governor Bush, closing statement, sir.
Here's what I believe. I believe we're at the verge of the greatest time to be alive in this world. But Washington is holding us back. How we tax, how we regulate. We're not embracing the energy revolution in our midst, a broken immigration system that has been politicized rather than turning it into an economic driver. We're not protecting and preserving our entitlement system or reforming for the next generation. All these things languish while we have politicians in Washington using these as wedge issues. Here's my commitment to you, because I did it as Florida. We can fix these things.
Did
we can grow
Florida?
Economically when and restore America's leadership in the world so that everybody has a chance to rise up. I humbly ask for your vote. Whenever you're going to get to vote, whenever the primary is. Thank you all very much.
Whoa.
Oops.
Mr. Trump.
You know what? You should get a different pair of glasses. Or not.
No, here we go. Our country is in serious trouble. We don't win anymore. We don't beat China in trade. We don't beat Japan with their millions and millions of cars coming into this country in trade. We can't beat Mexico at the border or in trade. We can't do anything right. Our military has to be strengthened. Our vets have to be taken care of. We have to end Obamacare, and we have to make our country great again, and I will do that. Thank you.
Well, kind of a weekend.
Gentlemen, thank you.
But I guess when you kill it throughout.
It's over.
That's it.
You relieved? You were nervous before? They don't look relieved. They're like, get me out of here. Thank you all very much. And that will do it for the first Republican primary debate
there you
night
go,
of the
folks.
2016 presidential race.
All right.
Our thanks to the candidates who will now be joined by their families on stage. But we're not done.
I guess we're going to go
starts in a moment. I'll be running over to
live
the set.
With
first, Brett,
right after a short break.
After a short break.
I stop all the broadcasts and everything, so you have to refresh everybody.
Okay, and we will embed a video stream of Cliff and I. right?
I will attempt to see to do that.
The other, our other channel should be fine. All right, so let's turn off the. Let's just watch them.
Families have been sitting here in this arena on pins and needles.
Way more nervous than these guys.
Way more nervous. You know, waiting for every answer, waiting for everything. I don't know.
I guess.
And now, you know, they get up, they get their hugs, they get their kisses.
All right, I thought for a second they thought they weren't.
Just to get this over with.
Can I also say that at the risk of sounding Pollyanna-ish, I actually think all 10 candidates did quite well.
Look at Senator Cruz.
Look at this. Look at Senator Cruz.
Look at Senator Cruz.
They all handled themselves well. I thought they all made their points. You know,
they all had moments, Chris. They
absolutely
all had some moment on some issue. And they ran the gamut as far as the different issues. We've been working in that cocoon.
That is the thing. Is that I think Jeb Bush is one of the few people who didn't have a moment. He just sort of, he was just there.
Did not have a moment.
All right. Well, let's stop it, and we'll come back up. Folks, we'll be right back after this. Cliff Schechter and I will give a little analysis, and we'll be back in just a few. Oh, we just lost. Bear with us. Technically, a little bit challenged tonight. Here we go.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth.